Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday. It's Wednesday, December 30th, 2015. And with me again today, I have John Martellaro because I had so much fun chatting with you yesterday. I just wanted to have you back again today. How are you? How's it going?
That was great fun yesterday. Yeah. Good morning. Pleasure to be here again.
It's awesome to have you. And today I thought it would be cool to have you on so that we could talk, primarily about the iPad. But when I say primarily about the iPad, what I really mean is your take on what we could be doing to make this a more useful device all the way around. And by that, what I really mean is you have some ideas about the iPad and how it's time to really open up the platform for on-device coding.
Well, I want to start with a story that got me thinking the other day. As a young physics student, an astrophysics student, the requirement was to learn Fortran early so you could do computational science. So there was a sophomore in college, and there was a free Fortran class taught by one of the computer science guys in the evening, and my friend and I jumped on over that, and we started learning Fortran 4 in the very early days. And throughout my career with Lockheed Martin and White Sands Missile Range, I always used Fortran. I used other languages as well, but that's still a primary scientific tool for mathematical representation of algorithms and research, even today. And so in my case, it was very natural to want to have an Apple II. When the Apple II first came out, I jumped all over it and bought an Integer Basic Apple II. Soon it had a AppleSoft Basic card for floating point. And when I got the Basic in front of me, especially the AppleSoft floating point, I looked at that and I go, I understand that. I know what this is. I've been doing Fortran for years and years. And so when I see the Basic, I say to myself, well, yeah, the syntax is a little different. It's kind of sort of on the cheap, but I comprehend exactly what's going on here. And programming it in Basic became immediate. And so that was the sort of the introductory feel to having your first computer. Mm-hmm. And now, admittedly, I was on a science track, so I was focused on that, and that doesn't happen to everyone. But I know there's a lot of readers out there and listeners who are engineers and scientists and technology workers who went down a similar path and embraced their TRS-80 or their PET, or their Commodore 64, like Steve Sandy, who I interviewed the other day, and those of us who selected the Apple II. And then I started thinking, well, what about today? What happens with kids who don't have, say, a desktop computer, and their first computational device is an iPad for Christmas? What are they introduced to? And the thinking there is that my wife is a college professor, and she teaches Python and Perl and C++ and Java and Unix to her students. And she reports to me that they're woefully unprepared because they haven't had enough math and they don't think algorithmically. And so when they first take an introductory Python class, they don't have the mental tools. And if only they had an earlier introduction, if only their iOS device would somehow entice them or allow them to, mess around and do their programming. Or instead of having to come into the university lab and use the iMacs, they could actually do it at home. And the laptop computers are expensive for community college students.
Sure.
And so I got to thinking, well, what has happened here in our evolution of technology? So when the iPad first came out, the vision was that it's an appliance. You don't see the file system, nor should you see the file system. It's designed to be an intermediate device between the small portable phone and your desktop machine. It's great for shopping and game playing and browsing and reading your email. It does all sorts of common things that you do simply. Instead of having to sit down at your Mac and boot it up and log on and launch an app and authenticate and all this stuff. You just sit down with your iPad and you just tap an icon and you're up and running. So it made perfect sense. Plus, the hardware limitations of the original iPad were severe. It was, as we know, it was only 1% or so as fast as the modern iPad. So right. iOS had to dance delicately around presentation and the power. So it was a simple little device. You touched icons, you browsed, you read your email, you purchased, you did your shopping, and you played some games. And so it was a perfect little device for that. And its conception was perfect. It was designed to do what it did. But then So flash forward 5 years, the iPad has grown, and I've written about this a lot. iOS has had to grow to match the power of the hardware, and it's sort of not doing as good a job of that as I'd hope. So now we have these powerful devices. The iPad is a mature device. Everybody who's ever wanted an iPad probably has one. And millions of young people are being introduced to this device. It has to grow. It has to mature. It has to expand in its capabilities. And so the simple little device that you carried around is sort of like, been there, done that. How is the iPad going to evolve in its maturity and its capability? And one of those ways, it seems to me, would be nice would be to introduce elements of programmability within the context of security and sandboxing and so on. And that might entail perhaps a sandboxed environment where a simulator of some sort, a virtual machine, or something where you can safely, you know, mess around with scripting with Perl or Python or Ruby or something like that. Or maybe even get a basic C compiler on there or something where students who have an iPad and they carry around, they say, oh, yeah, I can do my homework on that. I can actually write a little code. But regrettably, it's hard to do that. Now, I've seen some Perl apps that are sort of half-baked and they've gotten terrible reviews and it's not a full implementation of Perl. I haven't had time to check to see if there's a Python app. I think that's probably in the same boat.
I know there's at least one, but I haven't ever played with any of those, so I can't speak to their
because of the. I think the developer gets caught with the sandboxing limitations and the restrictions, and not being able to see the file system and access to the hardware restricted, and so on. They have to make a decision, and I think the best decision there is to treat it as a pedagogical idea. You know, you're not going to have a full C or Python development environment. You're going to dummy out some things that relate to file access and hardware, and just basically teach the language. But there's a lot of room for development thought and research there on how full an implementation you can do, so that students could actually think about doing their homework on an iPad instead of having to go out and buy a MacBook Air or something worse, like a Chromebook, which I don't recommend.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a G-rated show, so I can't say what I think about that.
I appreciate your restraint, John.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. You know, I hadn't really thought about it until you started talking about this. You know, just the whole thing about I'm not really customizing what I do through code on my iPad in the same way that I do on my Mac. But I have found, for me, there are some tools that give me like a taste of that. But they're not tools where I sit down and actually start writing line by line code. They're modular systems. And the first one that comes to mind for me that I use a lot, it's called Workflow. And I equate it to AppleScript for the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And although I should equate it more to Automator for the iPad, because you're not writing the code, you're taking modules and putting them together. And then it creates this own little mini app thing that you can run right on your iPad and have it do things like link together actions between different apps.
I think that's great. I think that's a good start. One of the things that my wife tells me about in her classes is that programming is algorithms. Programming is logic. And while it's great to have the ability to connect items and create a workflow, I don't think, in my opinion, that that trains you to think about if statements and conditionals and loops and structure and objects and data flow and file management and searching and pattern matching and all the things that happen with programming environment. And where that comes in is that young people, I think, are having a hard time creating a vision for themselves of where they want to go. A lot of her students sign up for the gaming class because they think they're going to play games, whereas my wife is teaching them the programming fundamentals. Baby talk, not even game playing 101. You know, it's like 2D Apple II class, you know, barely above text-based, 2D graphics animation where you're moving things around on the screen and you're setting conditions like...
She's teaching them how to write Pong is what you're saying.
Yeah, and a little and maybe adventure games where, you know, if you collect enough tools, you know, you can fight off the evil wizard, you know, it's at phase two and so on. So there's the concept of aggregation, databasing, counting, conditionals, timing, you know, things like that. And all these things go into creating a vision for yourself about what you want to do in the future. Do you want to do scientific research, computational science? Do you want to write games for Lucasfilm and get into rendering and wireframes and advanced physics and the rendering of water and hair and things like that that you see on the movies from Pixar and things like that? Or do you want to, you know, get into business and write Java code and do a bang-up job for some investment company, you know, in terms of analyzing stocks, you know, but all of that kind of starts with having a personal tool, whether it's your first, if it's your first computer, you're enamored with it. And the kinds of things that you do on that machine sort of create a vision for you and excite you and turn you on to the future. And hopefully if you choose the right apps, you know, if you're working with, say, Sky Safari 5 on an iPad, and you become excited by looking at the stars and understanding how stars are formed and galaxies are formed, then that might send you on a path towards astronomy. Or if you have some of these educational apps that you happen to download that teach you about levers and ramps and movements and physics and friction, you know, you might be suddenly excited about physics, kinematics, things like that. So the nature of your first computational device, as I was talking about with me and Fortran and Apple II and BASIC, I think can help set the tone for your technical vision of your future. And if your device is so limited that all you can basically do is play games and shop, then you have really kind of closed the warp circle around yourself and limited your vision to the universe about the opportunities. Now, I'm sure there are educators out there who are aware of what they're doing with their students, and they're jolly on their way to exciting their students about specific apps and opportunities. And I'm sure that there are lots of educational apps out there. I've seen some of them for the iPad. But they're not what we normally think about as mainstream. When kids get an iPad on Christmas morning and they start playing with it, what are they likely to do with it? And how do they approach the device? And what are their opportunities and the power and the tool and the visions that can lead them onto a career so that they can see them, visualize themselves doing something in the future that's fun and exciting and they can do with passion. And by the way, make some money at it. So those are the thoughts that I have about the iPad and programming this post-Christmas week.
All right. Well, I'm going to toss out another app that you may be able to appreciate. Well, I know a lot of people do because it's actually kind of cool, and it's called Tickle. And what I like about Tickle is that it's another modular type programming system where you're dragging blocks around and putting them in order, and then the code comes out of that. And what it does, which is really cool, because you get like instant real world feedback to what you're doing with your code. It controls devices like Sphero products, and some programmable drones and several other devices.
Mm.
And it's really cool. I picked it up because I got a hold of a Sphero BB-8, and I have some kids in my life that are great at offering me perspective on how the rest of the world is using different tech products. And one of the first questions that I got was, why can't I do anything more than just kind of remote control drive it? And my response was, I don't know. That's actually really surprising. We should be able to do more. So I went on the hunt and found Tickle. And then immediately BB-8 became not only this infinitely cooler device that I was driving around my place, but it became an educational tool because then we sat down together and started writing apps for BB-8 that would drive it around and make it do specific things and chirp at certain times and change its colors.
Perfect, perfect.
Yeah, and it was awesome. Absolutely awesome.
That's just exactly the avenue that I'd like to see kids working on. And I'm sure there are lots of smart kids out there who are guided in that direction by their parents or their science teachers or whatever. I'd like to see that to be more pervasive. I'd like to see Apple celebrate it more. I'd like to see Apple push that in a more visible way. And maybe I'll write an article about all the things you can do along those lines with programming. One of the things I was wondering about just before the show was whether there's any facility to drive an iPad as a display for a Raspberry Pi. If anybody out there has done that or seen software that allows you to do that, I'm all ears.
Oh, yeah. If you have any suggestions to help John out with that, you can hit us up on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can shoot an email to observations@macobserver.com, and you can leave comments in the show notes. And I'll make sure that John gets that info. Also, if you have any suggestions on apps that John should be checking out for coding on the iPad, let me know.
Please.
Because that'd be really cool. John, we are almost out of time, but before we go, I want to throw another idea out at you.
Very good.
Are you familiar with If This Then That?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely wonderful. Yes, you can do everything through a web interface on your computer, but they also have their iOS apps. And I just love that you can take these devices and services that wouldn't otherwise be able to do anything together and think through the logic and put them together in
that's excellent
ways.
I will mention that in my article too.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And my favorite example of this, If This Then That becoming incredibly useful was this last summer when I needed to make a window air conditioner actually become smart. And so what I did was I set up an If This Then That recipe that checked for the official temperature in Boulder. And if it rose above 72, because at that point my place would start getting too hot, then it would trigger a Wemo switch that would turn on an air conditioner. And when the temperature dropped back below 72, it would shut it back off.
These are the kinds of things where when you become involved with it at that level and you start messing around, your brain starts thinking about solving problems and building skills. And, you know, there's only one thing employers are interested in out there. And they're not interested in hiring people to come in the morning and read the newspaper and sip a cup of coffee. They're interested in young people who are smart and can solve problems and have skills and are aggressive and intelligent and friendly and can go out there and tackle things and solve a problem for a company.
Yes.
This is all part of that building process.
Yes, it is. And we really are out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up.
Okay. See you next time.
Yeah. Thank you for being here, John.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was great for me too. I love the paths you take me down. And listeners, thank you for being here. I love that you guys come and hang out with me every single day. And I love the feedback that you guys give me and the reviews that you put on the iTunes store as well. That's all awesome. You guys really rock. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.